Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, what does it mean to be a modern warrior? First off, the elephant in the room. Warrior isn't a dirty word. A warrior is mindful. They seek excellence and have learnt to control their aggression. It's about understanding leadership, developing individual resilience, and seeking consistent human optimization. Remember, lifting heavy isn't dangerous. Being weak is dangerous. Fortune favors the brave, and you're never given more than you can handle. This, then, is the Warrior You podcast. All call signs, ready, ready, ready. Let's roll! Boom. G'day, Trent.
G'day, Bram. How are you, mate?
I'm good.
What's going on?
We are going to talk to Mark Matthews, the big wave surfer. This is going to be frigging epic. Oh, wow.
Just jumped in there. It's going to be epic. Like, have you seen his videos? YouTube?
Here we go. Are you taking over the podcast? You had the Steve Marshall on, and now you're taking over the Warrior You podcast.
I've got a rush on. I've got a run on now.
Okay. Today on the Warrior You podcast, I'm joined by Trent and we're joined by the awesome big wave surfing legend, Mark Matthews. So seeing how naturally he takes to the water, Trent, it's hard to believe that he was once afraid of the ocean. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. And that's
family
amazing, isn't it?
Trips. It is. He'd spend family trips at home, the seaside, sitting on the beach, watching the waves and not going out in the water. And today he's arguably one of the world's best, well, he is the leading big wave surfer. He's a Red Bull athlete and the winner of 3 back-to-back Oakley Big Wave Awards. No big deal.
What have you done lately?
I don't know. Feeling pretty inadequate.
Yeah, me too.
I once saw my kids and my dog swim out in waves big enough where I was like, sharks, waves, no. Yeah, he's come across a few obstacles in his way, which is why we're going to talk to him today around resilience. He had this massive wipeout while surfing on the New South Wales coast in 2016, and he landed feet first onto a shallow reef. Mate, did you hear what he did to himself?
He broke himself royally, I think.
Mate, I don't even know how we're going to ask him this without, you know, triggering him. He fractured his shin, snapped his anterior and posterior cruciate ligaments, and teared an artery and nerve.
Oh, you mean, God. You mean tore an artery and nerve?
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. Mark Matthews, thanks for coming on the podcast. Where does the podcast find you today?
I am at home in Coolangatta.
Okay, Coolangatta.
I'm in my little makeshift home studio. Well, it was, but I just took everything down because my family arrived for the Easter holidays. Finally made it up here after 3 attempts. Now the borders are all open again. So shut everything down. That's why I'm now sitting down on the ground here and doing this podcast with a little half studio set up.
So you're in Coolangatta. The family's there. That's cool. That's pretty cool. Are you permanently based there, Mark?
Yeah, I've been up here for about 3 years now. After I got my bad injury, I left Sydney for warmer waters, better sort of beginner surfing waves because I had to start all over again, and left and loved it. Wish I moved up here 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, let's get to that in a bit. So when did you discover your love for surfing, I guess, straight off the bat?
Oh man, so long ago. I reckon around sort of 8-9 years old is I think around the time when I got my first surfboard. My dad surfed, and then he became a doctor and a surgeon, and then kind of didn't have time to surf, but then picked it back up when I learned to surf, like to teach me, and then he started surfing again. And yeah, and then I can remember being terrified of the ocean when I was little, like out of my friendship group of when we were young, and we used to go camping on family Christmas holidays and we'd go down to the beach to surf. I was always the scared kid who wouldn't go out if the waves were sort of not even big, like, but all the other kids would go and I was the really scared kid. So it's strange to end up, and I always run into those same kids and they're just like, I can't believe you do what you do after you being such a wuss growing up.
That's pretty funny. Why transition then into big wave surfing and not just like stick on the pro tour where it's like, you know, arguably really soft? I can imagine Kelly Slater's listening to this.
I wasn't good enough, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did do the competition circuit for a little bit, but I was never really a naturally gifted or talented surfer. And I was kind of average in the competition field at best. And I just saw an opening where you could forge a career within the sport of surfing by basically surfing waves that no one else wanted to surf.
Jesus.
Wow. that was just like, okay, I've got one big problem with this is that I'm terrified of big waves. but I really didn't want to go and work, and I really wanted to be a professional surfer, and that kind of outweighed the fear of big waves. So I just figured it out.
And that was your sole motivation?
Basically, at that time, it's shifted like throughout over the years. But originally, when I was probably like 16, 17 years old, or yeah, like 18, when I was just leaving school, mate, I wanted what every teenager wanted. I wanted a cool car and a hot girlfriend, and they were my motivators. The only way I could see myself doing that was through surfing, and it was like the only way I could do it in surfing was surf big waves that no one else wanted to surf. So
this is like
that was it.
This is like listening to Daniel Ricciardo going, you know what, I was in Formula One. I was really good, but I wasn't good enough. So I started doing smash-up derbies.
That's probably what happens.
Oh, we're never getting him on the podcast, are we, Trent?
Yeah. Oh, look, we have a crack.
So let's have a think about this for a second. I've tried surfing. I suck at it. You tried it. You were good at it. But the people who are really good at it, it's like, I guess it's like everything. We don't realize how great some people are at things until we start to gravitate or work in and around them.
Yeah, you can see it at a really young age. Now, even now, when I watch up and coming kids, you can see this extra level of talent that they have at a specific sport within before they're 10 years old. Like you just see their ability to pick things up really quickly. And there's a few other factors that go into it, the sort of their diligence and hard working and how much they want to win at something is definitely going to push them a long way. But if you don't have that sort of talent ability level young, you could still make it, but it's going to be a whole lot harder than for those sort of freakishly talented kids. And not to say that those talented kids don't have to put the work in, but yeah, there's a huge gap. And in surfing, like most sports, especially like the action sports realm, there's only a handful of surfers that can make a living out of it comfortably. And I wasn't one of those sort of 10 people who were freakishly talented within Australian surfing.
So, Mark, you're saying that you recognise that talent in those sort of, you know, 10-year-old kids in whatever sport they're involved in. With your sort of fear of waves at around, I'm assuming around that age, how long was it before you got into big wave surfing? Were you an adult or were you a teenager? Like, you know, when did you start to try and acquire these big wave skills?
Oh, the big changing moment for me was I had left school and I was working in a bar in Circular Quay making cocktails and coffees in the morning. And that was kind of my career. And I was like, I've either got to go and study further and get a proper job, or you know, like give away this surfing, or you know, like it's kind of time up for me after that. And I just, out of the blue at that point in time, I wasn't really making a living out of surfing, but out of the blue I got a call from an editor of Track Surfing magazine, and he invited me on a sort of photo shoot for the magazine. And the first time I'd ever been invited on a surf trip, and I was like, I couldn't understand why this guy was calling me for the surf trip, because like I was a relative no one within the sport of surfing at that point in time. I found out later that he'd invited about 40 other surfers on this trip before he got to my name at the bottom of the list. And everyone had declined because where they were inviting to everyone to was the bottom of Tasmania to surf this sort of mythical wave that rumors had been spreading around the surf industry about, this huge monster that broke off the bottom of Tasmania. And I was just like, I wasn't in the position to say no. It was like, this was my one shot to get a career. It was like, if you're going to say no to this, you're done.
Yeah.
So I said yes. I ended up down in Tasmania. And there were a handful of factors going on at that point in my life that just made me extra motivated to push myself. One big thing was that I was actually living with my mum at that time. Like, we were sharing an apartment after my parents split, and she'd actually become really sick the sort of month leading up to that trip, and she hadn't been able to get out of bed and work or anything. And it was just in the back of my head, it was like, okay, I'm going to have to take care of her now too. So it was like this extra motivation on top of it. And then when I went down to surf, I was terrified, but that motivation just kind of pushed me over the edge. And it took, I'd say, one big wave, like a really big wave that I caught, the first one that I wiped out on. And then I came up like without a scratch on me after this huge wipeout. And I was like, hold on a minute. It's like, this is as bad as it looks. And then I went on to ride a handful of waves that day. And, best feeling I'd ever experienced.
Wow.
And on the top of that, the photos and the footage went out into the surf industry all over the world. And I got my first surfing sponsorship off the back of that. And it was like I signed this 3-year contract, which was basically saying, you don't have to work anymore for the next 3 years. You got to go out and you're a professional surfer now. The caveat of the contract was I had to go and find more waves like the one down in Shipstone's Bluff. Terrifying waves, surf those waves, get content, goes out in the media, and then the sponsors keep coming. So I just realized after that was my career path from that point on.
Trent, are you thinking what I'm thinking? I'm in, mate. I'm all in. Let's do this.
I'll take you down to the next swell.
Hell no.
Yeah, I was looking at you going, you know, I'll do some things, but, you know, kudos to you, Mark, because that really is – that really is sort of just jumping in feet first, so to speak, and just giving it a red hot crack and taking that opportunity when it comes your way. And you know, it's one of those sliding doors moments in your life. I'm sure you could be sitting in an office job you know, chasing big waves. It's an amazing story.
The thing that made a big difference was the company that I was in on that trip. And I didn't realize when I went down there, one of the surfers that was with me is Kieran Perro, who was at the time, I had no idea, but he was one of the sort of better big wave surfers within the industry. But I didn't know that. I thought he was just this average, like, good surfer. And he comes across quite dorky, Kieran. He's like, he got like 99.8 in his HSE back then. Like, he's super smart. And I remember we turned up to the hotel, unpacked all that stuff, and he had like all his stuff, like, pretty much in alphabetical order, just laid out. And I think I was just like, man, who
doesn't everyone?
A dorky kid. But then when we were out in the water, he just started taking off on these monster waves. And I was like, well, if he can do it, you know, I better be keeping up with him. So it was kind of like being around someone else that pushed me like to take that step over the line. And I think that was a huge part of it as well.
I love what you said around motivation too, and getting over fears through motivation. You know, motivations, not self-motivation, because that's something different. But I think it's sort of analogously the same as a guy who wants to go to SAS or Second Commando Regiment or First Commando Regiment for that matter, and you've got to do the parachute, you know, course. And the thing is, you're standing on the back ramp of an aircraft. You've never jumped off before, but the fear of not reaching your goal outweighs the fear of what it's going to be, not knowing whether the parachute will open or not, which invariably knowledge dispels fear. The thing is going to open. And like you said, you know, in fact, what you're talking about is worse, because there's not that many people that have actually done it. And I would say the controls with parachuting are really, really tight, actually. Whereas if you fall off a big wave, you're probably, how far are you falling before you hit the water? It must be 50, 60 feet.
Yeah, no. It depends on the places. The biggest waves in the world, it's kind of, yeah, it gets up to sort of 30, 40 feet, maybe 50 feet, the bigger ones. You're traveling so fast and you hit the water, and you would know from the training that you've done, you hit that water, it feels like concrete. So it knocks all the wind out of you, and then you're getting rolled around underwater. But
yeah, I can't imagine it.
It's the motivation's got to outweigh the fear that you feel. That's why when I deal with corporate audiences or people, or I'm doing coaching sessions, it's like the first thing is like, what do you want from this life? Like, what do you want from this one life that you have on planet Earth? Like, tell me, what does your career look like? Yeah. What do your finances look like 10 years from now? What do you want your family structure to look like? What do you want your relationships to be like? What do you want your health to be like? And paint a picture of what they want, but then also what they want to avoid. Like, I want to avoid having to go back to work and do a job that I didn't want to do. I wanted to, you know, like, look after my mom. So I had these motivators both sides. And then it's kind of like the first thing you do is got to clarify that. Otherwise, you'll never have the motivation to push to where your potential might be. Like, a lot of people are like, I never would have dreamt that I could have had the career I had when I was a terrified little boy, scared of the ocean. And most people around me never would have believed I would have done it either. But it's like you don't know until you've taken that step what you're actually capable of. You know, like there's probably a whole lot more in there.
Amazing.
That you don't know about, and that the situation forces it out of you, I think. But you got to find out, take a while to figure out what you want.
And Mark, just explain for the listeners, I know Trent and I would love to know this too. Like, what is it like at the top of that wave, like at a big wave like that? What are the feelings and what are the sensations and sort of what's happening in your mind? What does it look like?
The first, like, really, like, there's multiple nerve-wracking moments in the lead up to surfing a big wave. The one that sticks out a lot is when you've already paddled out into the lineup and you're waiting in position to catch this huge mountain of water when it's coming. But the thing is, the only way you can get on that wave to catch it is you've got to be in a position, like this really narrow window of where it looks like that wave's going to break on you, but it just doesn't break on you, but you're in the perfect spot to catch it. So there's this moment as these, like, it's like the horizon that you're looking out on goes black. You just see mountains of water coming, and every ounce of your being wants you to paddle as fast as you can out so that these waves don't break on you. But if you paddle too far out, you're never going to catch one of these waves. So there's this moment where you've just, like, you got to, like, hold the line. Like, you got to hold the position as the mountains are coming and just trust that you're in the spot.
That is crazy. For me,
that's the most nerve-wracking moment.
All I'm hearing is you saying, Bram, you could be a big wave surfer, just paddle out there and never get into that window.
Wave. What do you reckon? Out.
Trent, we'd just be the guys that never ever get. Yeah. Actually, I think that is it, because you get towed out in some cases, don't you?
Yeah, sort of when the waves get beyond 40 to 50 feet, and it's in that realm, depending on how the waves break, they're just moving too fast to actually catch paddling, and then you use the jet skis. But quite rarely now, like the safety equipment that's been developed, the inflatable life jackets that we have, they're making the paddle component of big wave surfing, like, you can test the limits a whole lot more now because of that extra safety. So guys are now, you can paddle into sort of 40 to 50 foot waves, which is you couldn't do that without the vests on.
How would you describe the power behind it?
Oh man, it's like I said, that moment that you hit the water after a fall, it feels like concrete. And then it's like it's almost like time freezes because you know you've fallen and everything slows down, and then you feel the wave sort of slowly suck you up high, and then it feels like you drop off a waterfall, like an underwater waterfall. It's like there's no gravity because it's just rolled you up, and then you're coming down with the lip. And then that next impact's like a 100-foot washing machine. It's just like smashes you, and there's this roar, just rattles you. And then it will roll you around like a, in this moment when you're down there, it's like, because in my head, the whole thing of surviving big wipeouts is just not panicking, because the panic is what makes you lose your oxygen quick. So the really main part of it is don't panic. You can be the fittest person in the world, hold your breath forever, but as soon as you panic, you're done. So you're trying to figure out ways to stay calm and relaxed underwater. So I try and envision that next sort of ride in that washing machine like I'm on a roller coaster ride at a theme park, and it's like I can just enjoy this crazy ride where I'm getting thrown around underwater. And it's if you cannot panic, it's actually weirdly fun under there, like the way it throws you around, and then it will dissipate, let you go, and then you got to get to the surface. And that's where the life jackets come in handy, because if you are really deep, you can inflate your life jacket and that'll bring you up without you having to use any more energy. If you don't have that on, then it's a tough, scary swim to the surface, because as you're swimming to the surface, you're wondering in the back of your head if that next wave behind the one that you just wiped out on is about to break right where you're coming up. So the whole time you're like, oh my God, we're waiting for this next wave to hold you back down underwater again. So that part's a bit nerve-wracking too.
Yeah, Mark, it sounds like from what you've said so far that you spend the entire time underwater and fighting to get back up. But that's obviously and whilst I'm sure that happens a lot, but I'm sure you know that's not the reason why you do this. So you've told us what it's like when you're falling, when you're underwater. Like, what's it like when you actually, you know, for those people that don't surf and haven't ever surfed, what is it like when you're actually on the board and you know you're nailing it?
Oh man, there's a moment. So every surfer is trying to get barreled, what we call barreled. So you get yourself positioned inside the barreling part of the wave, which is like the full force of the ocean is just surrounding you like this big water cave. And there's a moment when you do everything right where you position inside that big water cave and you know that you're going to come out. Like there's this moment where you've done everything right, you're perfectly positioned, you can feel that you're going to come out, and you get to just like take in the next 3 or 4 seconds, and it's just the wildest experience. I heard the late Andy Irons, one of the best surfers that's ever lived on the planet, he described that moment as it's like you're being touched by God. And I think that was the best description I've ever heard. Because once that happens to you, and it happens to any surfer, you are hooked for life. Your whole existence from that point on is trying to recreate that moment. So you're just chasing waves around the world, trying to find that barreling wave again. So
chasing that dragon.
Even a surfer is just hunting that moment down.
There is a spirituality to surfing. There is some spirituality to it.
Yeah, it's just that connection with nature, I think it is. I think like if on a spiritual level, it's that really deep connection to nature. Like you're in one way you're trying to manage the forces of nature and the force in the ocean. You're, you know, in some sense competing with it in a way that it's like sometimes it feels like it's just trying to kill you, but then it's also trying to give you the greatest ride of your life. So
yeah.
It's pretty amazing. And then there's all that. There's pretty decent science around earthing, right? Have you heard the term of earthing? So it's like when a human body touches the earth, it's like the negative ions within the earth's field actually changes your physiology for the better. And they can measure the changes that happen. Yeah. And then supposedly the ocean has the greatest source of those negative ions that alter your physiology. So I think in that notion, I think being in around the ocean, even looking at the ocean is kind of like that. It does something to you that feels beneficial, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think sailors, you know, career sailors will say the same thing, and surf lifesavers. And I did surf lifesaving for 6 or 7 years, and there is something to that, being even just being out on a board or whatever it is that takes your fancy, being in a boat, being on a ship. You know, I get it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's really hard to explain the actual thing, but when they show the hormonal changes, like all these different changes within your system, and that's what's giving you the feeling, you know.
Mm. Yeah. My mate, he's been on this podcast before. He's a good friend of mine, the actor Dan McPherson, and he's massively drawn to the ocean. He's an ex-triathlete. He's a bloody great swimmer in his own right. And I went up and stayed at his place up on the Central Coast, and he's like, hey, you know, come out for a morning swim. We walked out there and it was bigger than anything I've ever swam in the military. And I was just like, yeah, no worries, mate, it'll be all good, you know. And it's like we started swimming out into these, you know, decent sized waves, he's just off and out into it. And yeah, I had the best time. And it was nothing like the little waves that we used to go out in the storms in Cronulla. Like, these things were legitimately pretty big, you know. But he says too that it's a grounding thing. If he doesn't get to it daily, then he doesn't feel like himself.
Yeah, that's definitely it. And there's no kind of closer connection than swimming and body surfing in there. Like no board, no nothing. It's just you and the water.
Yeah.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Wave, sir.
Just to change pace a little bit, so I guess I'm leading you here. What's been the biggest setback in your career?
the latest wipeout that I had, which the doctors said I'd never surf again after.
Wow.
I got surfing a wave down the south coast of New South Wales. Not a particularly big wave, but it's the type of wave that we call it's a slab wave. And that's because it basically comes out of really deep water and then it breaks on a really shallow slab of reef. That's kind of why we call it a slab wave. And this magnifies the size and the power of the barreling part of the wave. And that's why you want to surf it, you know. It also creates great content, great photos. It's spectacular looking. So on the career front, they're good to surf these type of waves, but they are dangerous. I was just at a point in my career where I was a bit overconfident. I didn't, you know, I had thousands of wipeouts on bigger waves. I didn't give the wave the respect that it deserved. Didn't do the due diligence that you should do when you surf a new wave. Like I didn't study the footage. I didn't ask the local surfers how best to approach the wave. I just went straight out there blind and made a mistake, took the wrong wave. And it basically just picked me up and smashed me into the reef. And I landed on my feet on the reef, but one of my legs kind of got stuck in a hole in the reef. And then my knee completely dislocated and I tore every ligament and tendon that holds your knee joint together. And then when my knee was apart underwater and I was getting rolled around, it tore through the major artery that supplies blood to your foot and then also the major nerves that control your foot. So all of that was destroyed and I was kind of in and out of consciousness after it happened because the pain was so bad. I was kind of fainting and then coming back like once they'd got me to the beach. And I woke up the next day in Canberra Hospital and I remember just being in blinding pain and looking down and just seeing the mess that my leg was in.
Ugh.
And then the surgeon came into the room. He performed emergency surgery on my leg the night before. He came in and gave me that kind of good news, bad news spiel. And he's like, the good news is, Mark, we managed to save your leg. Oh. So supposedly if I had have arrived 1 hour later, they would have had to amputate my leg at the knee because of the internal bleeding was so bad. I was so lucky that the first ambulance officer that arrived on the beach, he called the medevac helicopter to get me to hospital. Even though there was no external blood and it didn't seem like the situation was that bad, he made that call. So that saved my leg. So I was over the moon when I got that news from the doctor. But I said to him, I was like, I got crazy pain from my knee down, just burning pins and needles. And I can't actually feel or move my foot at all. And he just said, that's the bad news. He said, you've destroyed all the nerves that run through your knee joint that control your foot. And he said, we could see from the surgery when we were doing it that they're so damaged that there was nothing we could do to fix them and they're not going to heal. So he was telling me that I couldn't use my foot ever again. And which meant in his eyes is like, you're never going to surf again. So at that point it was like career was done. That was 2016. It was over. So that was a tough ride. The next 18 months of rehab through there, I probably went down into the darkest sort of depressed places that I've been in. I was I was really fortunate when I was stuck in hospital after about 6 weeks waiting for all the surgery wounds in my leg to heal. I ran into this young kid. He actually messaged me on Instagram and I got this direct message. He said he read about what had happened to me on a surf media website. And he said, I've been following your career ever since I was a little boy. I noticed that you're in Canberra Hospital. She's like, would you mind if I came up and saw you and got a photo with you? And man, I'd be isolated myself even from my close friends and family. I didn't want to see anyone. So I didn't even reply to the kid. It was my wife though that saw the message on my phone, and she's like, fuck, he needs some company, you know? And wrote back to the kid and was like, yeah, no worries, Jason. Why don't you come up this afternoon? We'll get a photo and hang out for the afternoon. It'd be awesome. Anyway, I was just laying there, this one arvo, and this kid gets wheeled into my hospital bedroom by his brother.
Yeah.
He's complete quadriplegic. Broke his neck a month before I'd hurt myself and was in the same hospital. He was on the first trip of an around-the-world holiday after finishing school. And, man, he gets wheeled up to me, big grin on his face, and, like, tries his best to put his arm out that he can barely control, shake my hand. And, man, in the moment that I shook that kid's hand, it was like everything just changed for me. Did a complete 180. Like, I'd been laying there for the last 6 weeks, just so full of self-pity, anger, frustration, just like couldn't believe my career was over and just blaming everyone else for what had happened. And then in the blink of an eye, I felt like the luckiest person on earth. It was like, if I hit the reef any other way, I could be dealing with what this kid's dealing with.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not even comparable. It's a million times worse. And here's him dealing with it with like so much like courage, you know. And it was kind of a kick up the backside, you know, like to stop feeling sorry for yourself and just, you know, you're lucky. You know how much worse it could be? And that changed everything. Like to me, even the surgery wounds in my leg were so badly infected that the surgeons were like getting concerned because the infection was spreading up my leg and the antibiotics weren't working. Within 10 days of seeing that kid, all of the infections were gone.
That's awesome.
And the only difference was my headspace. I was laying in hospital now. I was happy about where I was. I was happy about the injury I had. I just felt lucky. And it just fully changed the way my body healed. And then so in my head, like after realizing that, I kind of over the next 18 months, I did all the rehab stuff that I needed to do, the physiotherapy and stuff. But I just tried to have that feeling of feeling lucky. Well, it's like gratitude, you know, like feeling grateful for the position I was in, even though it sucked. I just tried to feel that as many times as I could through a day. And it That's made crazy. Such a difference for me.
Yeah.
It made such a difference for how much energy that I had to do physio. It made such a difference to the way I slept. It made such a difference to the way I interacted with family and friends. And it just, to me, that was probably the most beneficial thing. That as far as being able to get back to surfing a year and a half later, I was able to only surfing at about 30% of what I could before. I was standing in a barreling wave again. And for me, that was like the best comeback ever. It was good enough. I never thought I'd get any better because I've got permanent nerve damage.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, my foot doesn't work still, but it's been like three and a half years now, and I've probably gotten back to about, I'd say like 60% capacity of what I could surf before, 60, 70, and I can surf big waves again.
So you're 80% better than what Trent and I are, is what you're saying.
95.
I went 95. Back and I was a full-on beginner again. It's kind of like I can see how frustrating it is to be a beginner, but then it's also really exciting because you're like, you're going from level one again and everything's kind of, every new thing you learn is exciting again. So
what did that... Sorry, Trent, you had a question.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you caught up with Jason again?
Yeah, we're good friends,
Really?
He lives just next door to me. He moved up to the Gold Coast. We've surfed a bunch of times together. I got to take him out. Like, this is how courageous this kid is. He goes surfing as a quadriplegic. So we surf out at Snapper Ross, a pretty long wave, and I try and ride the wave with him, and his brother and his mates push him on the wave. But any wave that he falls on, right, if he falls and he's face down, in the water, he has no way to turn himself over to breathe. Like he's got to lay there face down in the water, not being able to move while waves are hitting him, just waiting for one of us to get to him to turn him over. Like it's like
talk about bravery.
He has, it's like what I would feel surfing 100-foot waves. Like it's crazy how brave.
Oh my God.
That is as brave a story as I've ever heard.
Yeah. So yeah, I hang out with him a lot.
Shout out to Jason.
Surf a little bit. It's just, it takes a big toll on him to go out and surf. Just because he's not, you know, like he's only just getting the movement, enough strength in his shoulders to be able to do it. But he's awesome to be around there. Most motivating person I've come across.
So based on your rehab, meeting Jason, the injury, well, just your whole life, really, you know, what would you say would be your definition of resilience, given that?
Ah, man, I think resilience is just an ability to deal with life's difficulties. Like, everyone's life's difficult. And if it's not difficult now, it's going to be difficult at some point. Or you don't have to look far to there'll be someone in your life that's dealing with something so difficult, you know. And it's an ability to, like, to deal with that situation and bounce back from it and just keep living your life and getting the most out of life. Like, that, I think that's the simplest version of what resilience is. You can unpack so many different factors that go in to what makes people resilient and how you can create more resilience in your life. I think there's foundational things. There's kind of, like, the way I see it, there's certain foundational things that provide resilience in your life. And then there's all these kind of like add-on sort of smaller techniques that are beneficial, sort of like cognitive mental hacks that are good to learn. But there's foundational things, and I think that those foundational things are direction, like know what you want from life, know what you want to avoid, like get some direction. What bolsters that is how meaningful that direction is for you. Like, how much meaning are there in those things that you want to attain or avoid? When that's clear in your mind, you're straight away exponentially more resilient to the difficulties you're going to face. And you can go into all kinds of neuroscience that prove that. Like, it's like the best way I heard it put, like a really simple way I heard it put, is a psychologist put it this way. It's really good. It's like, if fear and difficulty is forced upon you, right, your nervous system reacts in the way a prey animal would react. So it's like you're being hunted. So you don't deal with stress well in that state, right? But if you decide to take on something scary, then your nervous system takes on the functionality of a hunter. It's like you're hunting a moment down, you know, and you're exponentially more resilient if you decide to take on the fear. Well, the only way you can decide to take on something stressful is you know what you want, you know, like you know why you're doing it and you push yourself to do it. So just based on that, you can see why that direction and meaning are so valuable. I think the other foundational one is support. Like, the people that you have around you are kind of can make or break your ability to deal with difficult things, make or break your ability to access potential and where you're going to go in life across different realms of your life. And then when you add on top of all those different things, there's kind of diet, exercise, sleep, like there's all the physical components that make you resilient. And then there's all the smaller, like, mental hacks, like the ability to access sort of mindful states, be in the present moment where you need to. Yeah, all the rest and retreat moments. Like, there's a whole package in there, but the foundational ones of knowing what you want, I think.
I feel like you've just yeah. given a pretty good overview of seven seasons of the Warrior podcast right there.
I've noticed like every well-written good book on the topics of resilience, stress, fear, anxiety, whatever, they say the same thing. And because you can't escape those fundamental things.
You know, I can't push hard enough to people the importance of positivity when it comes, and a positive bias when it comes to resilience. Mm.
Yeah, which is difficult for a lot of people, especially like myself. I'm hyper neurotic, so that's one of my personality traits. I'm introverted and neurotic, and I have, like, most people have a bias to the negative, right? Because it's survival. It's like you got to think of all the things that could go wrong so that you avoid them or you prepare for them and you don't die, you know? Like, that's that negative bias, but that wears you down, man, especially if those negative biases are not necessary, you know, which most of them in our days, you know, like in the age that we live in, like, we've kind of carried that sort of ancient software programming into this modern era, and you're running this old software program in this much safer world, and it's like exponential stress that you don't need. So, like you said, like, being able to, like, get that more positive, like, bias twist on it and understanding that you can upgrade that software and see the world with a different perspective. Yeah, I think that's so beneficial too.
Yeah, a lot of what you're saying sort of gels with, you know, what we've spoken about before, and we had a chat with Mumta Saha recently, who essentially said that anxiety, and this is a little bit around what you're talking about, is really rooted in the past and the future. It's not necessarily in the present. And, you know, we tend to worry about things that have happened previously or potentially in the future, but not what's going on right now. So, it's interesting to hear what you've said.
Definitely. I think, because I was playing around with different definitions across those words, you know, like across the terms of fear, stress, anxiety. And it seems like more, if it is in the present, that anxious state, it's most likely more fear, like something scary is happening to you now. That's probably better defined as fear. And everything else is like a forecast of what might happen. And then when that's kind of that anxiety loop, they're beneficial to a degree. It's kind of like when you would know this, everything on a performance, like to do with performance or like reaching your potential, it's everything has to be put on like a, what's it, like an inverted U curve or a hormetic curve, like the hormetic, when they use it in hormesis, like what's the toxic dose? What's the perfect dose, you know? And it's kind of the same with fear, the same with stress, the same with anxiety. You need that little bit of anxiety about what might happen if you don't push yourself, you know? Like, so it's kind of finding that perfect dose of those different things that's motivating enough for you to take the right actions, you know, but not paralyzing, you know?
Do you feel that in this day and age, people aren't scared enough? They're not going through things these days that give them enough fear, and they're not facing fears, and they want everything straight away, this whole ideal around instant gratification?
I don't know if I'd put it that they're not. It's like they're scared. Like the majority of people have fear, have a lot of anxiety, but it's like you're just... It's like the goal's wrong. The goal's to be comfort, you know, like that seems to be a goal that a lot of people have, is just to be comfortable, to eradicate difficulty from your life. But it's like when you do that and you're trying to avoid difficulty in every aspect of your life, it's like it just creeps up on you, you know, and eventually you become so stagnant that the things that you fear or you've been avoided, they're like the snakes coming into the garden. Eventually they find you, you know. So it's kind of like, it's like the goal needs to be flipped more, like rather than just trying to avoid things to stay comfortable. It's more like, you know, what are you passionate about? And what are those things that you go out there and take on those difficult moments, you know? Not to say that, I love comfort too, just in some aspects of my life, you know, at some moments.
What's it like being a Red Bull athlete? Is it really cool?
It was amazing when I first signed. Like for me, first signing with Red Bull is like the pinnacle of my sport, you know, where you don't really, like originally we didn't have world champions or anything in big wave surfing in that action sports realm. And to be a Red Bull athlete felt like, you know, you were one of the best in the world. So yeah, it is awesome when I first signed. It's still really good. They're such a great company as far as the way that they look after their athletes and their staff and their, you know, it's a pretty amazing culture. It's just like the owner just loves seeing the boundaries of performance in all these different sports pushed, and he likes to be a part of that, which is a pretty cool culture and team to be a part of.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And now you do keynote speak and you assist businesses with their understandings of resilience and getting through adversity. Perhaps you'd like to share some of those experiences that you've had.
Yeah, I've been doing that on the side of surfing for about 10 years. And then more recently, since I had the bad injury, more full time for the last sort of 3 years. And initially, I hated it. Like being introverted, public speaking for me is like, it's as stressful as anything, you know.
It's another big wave.
I was getting more run down from the stress of public speaking and doing presentations than I was of when I had to go and surf huge waves. Like it was relaxing for me. If I didn't have to do a public speaking job and I was going to surf 50-foot waves, like that was my relaxing week. But it's the same as overcoming the fear of big waves. It's like it's the skill set, the knowledge, the experience of doing it over and over and over again that has gotten me to a place now where I'm more comfortable doing it. And now I actually enjoy it. Like there's it's one of the best things that I do in my life or in my career, where I get feedback from someone when they say, I heard you talk, and I just, like, it inspired me to just do this one thing within their career or within their life, or, you know, to do with their health. And they say it made a huge difference. And then it's not like they're doing all the work, but I'm just creating a tiny little moment, and whether the audience grabs onto it does something. But when I get that feedback, man, it makes all the stress and the anxiety of speaking work.
Yeah, so good. Yeah.
And I would imagine that it makes what you've gone through as well feel a little, if I can put it this way, a little more worth it, if you're actually able to then use that experience to change people's lives. And there's an, I guess there's an aspect of that in leadership as well. You leave these little breadcrumbs throughout your career, and they can be good or bad for, you know, people, or, you know, positive or negative. And for you to be able to leave those little positive trail of breadcrumbs through people's lives, it must be an amazing feeling.
Oh man, it's way more rewarding than surfing. Like, surfing was amazing, and at that young age where you just want to be the best at something and you want everyone to love you from doing something, like, that's highly motivating. But like, at the point I'm at in my careers now, it's like, I love the feeling of surfing big waves. I don't love the business side of it. I don't love any fame that comes with it. And then I love the feedback that I get from helping people in my speaking work. Like, they're, you know, like, I surf for now less to do with the business aspect, more to do with the love of the feeling, and I get to speak to people and help them in their lives, and then, like, get that feedback, man, it's so rewarding.
This has been such a treat, really, Mark, to talk to someone that's had your experiences. And for the listeners, you didn't see Trent and I both, like, when you were telling us about those injuries, both grimacing, and we've both seen our fair share of injuries. You know, I think the other thing is, I was actually wondering how I was going to tiptoe around asking you about that, and to be so open and frank about something that we can only imagine must have been, you know, such a painful and harrowing experience, and protracted. Yeah, so thanks for being so open about that as well. Where can our listeners find out more about you? And perhaps, you know, we get a lot of downloads, a lot of people in business as well who might want to get you to come and do some speaking. Where can they find more out about you?
My website is markmatthews.com. If you have any inquiries about needing a keynote speaker, a corporate training program, yeah, just email me there. Or on LinkedIn, it's fine. I chat to a lot of my corporate clients through LinkedIn. Or if you've got any questions on any topics, just find me on LinkedIn. Anything to do with surfing, I'm a bit lazy with it, but I post on my Instagram too. So that's at Mark Matthews Surf. So. And then if you want to watch the story, there's Rebel just completed a documentary about the story of what we've been talking about. It's called The Other Side of Fear. You can watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a whole range of videos on YouTube, I noticed as well, about your story, and you can hear a fair bit more about some of the things you've spoken to us about. So for our listeners, you know, jump on YouTube and just type in Mark Matthews, you'll come up with a fair few of them.
Were you using the face swap app again, were you, Trent, and putting yourself in big waves?
Putting myself in big waves? Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, we'll stick to classic cars, I think.
Yeah, that's it. That's all my thing.
Mark Matthews, thanks very much for being guest on the Warrior U podcast.
No worries. Thanks for having me, and I appreciate the work you do. It's awesome.
It's been great. Thanks.
Righto. Thanks for listening, gang. If you'd like to find out about our parent company and the leadership and resilience training and workshops that they offer, please head to the Hindsight Leadership website, www.hindsightleadership.com. Hindsight Leadership, all one word. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, and remember, every dollar helps, you can do that through the podcast website at www.podcast.warriorU.com.au. There's a donation tab at the bottom of the main page, and all donations are really appreciated. They keep the show on the road. And if you're interested in the Warrior U military preparation course, whether that's just the physical training component or the whole cultural training package, this can also be found through the podcast website, www.podcast.warriorU.com.au. Thanks for listening.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.